Welcome to The Stream. I'm Ahmed Tabeddin. For nearly 100 consecutive days, there have been rolling blackouts in South Africa, a country grappling with an energy crisis that it can't seem to shake. In response, the president has declared a state of disaster as a step towards trying to find a resolution. So what will it take to end the energy crisis in South Africa? Well, let's start today's conversation with a video sent to us from a small business owner in Johannesburg.
The rolling power blackouts are unpredictable, so you can't even plan according to them. Sometimes we only have 4 hours of electricity a day, and that means that we have to now get our people to work overtime. We have to bring in part-time people to come in during the hours when we do have power. And yet you still have to pay a hefty amount every month for the three-phase industrial electricity supply, whether you use it or not. We have to increase security and transport costs to drive our people home if they have to work overnight. And our fulfillment rate is at 50% now because we're not able to fulfill all of our orders on time. And that means we leave a lot of money on the table, and that means we're going to have to take cost-cutting measures such as letting people go or cutting our production lines.
Joining us to discuss from Johannesburg, Phakamile Slubi-Majola, spokesperson for the National Union of Metal Workers of South Africa. Also in Johannesburg, Jacob Maroga, director of Aeronite Energy and former CEO of Eskom. And also with us from Pretoria, energy expert Jose Moleshe. Thank you so much for being with us. And of course, we also want you to join the conversation, so be sure to share your thoughts and questions directly with us on YouTube. So I want to start by talking about who's being impacted. I mean, businesses are closing, daily tasks we hear like cooking or charging a phone in South Africa requiring planning, and economists are warning of a recession. Jose, how are you being impacted by this?
Oh, this impacts on everyone, really, including myself, as the energy, as you know, is an input, a critical input to the economy, whether it's hospitals, wastewater treatment works that impacts on the water supply. It's the industrial users, individuals at home. I mean, I'm sitting here somewhere in an office because my house has been load shedded. That impacts on me. That impacts on my business. So it's an impact that is throughout. The agricultural sector is heavily impacted in terms of irrigation. There isn't really a sector that you can say is not impacted by load shedding in South Africa.
And that's why I want to try to give our audience a sense of the scale of the problem, just how big a crisis it is, as you just did. Phakamile, can you give us a scale in your mind of who's most affected and why the crisis feels like it's deepening?
Oh, this is a terrible crisis that has engulfed South Africa. And it, in our view, is if this continues, this crisis of load shedding, we are going to see increased civil unrest just because of the fact that there are massive, massive job cuts taking place in South Africa at the moment. This deepens unemployment, poverty and inequality. We've already had social unrest happening about 2-3 years ago. Mm-hmm. So this is just going to deepen that kind of tension and the frustration that the masses are feeling at the moment because of the impact. I mean, it's affecting all areas of South African mm-hmm. life. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, when we held a press conference, we were talking not just about the costs, about a billion rand a day, but health workers were complaining about the fact that patients are dying on the table when the machines go off. So it really is a crisis.
And, you know, when we talk about this crisis, a lot of people in our YouTube chat also trying to pinpoint for us what they think is the root of the problem. Cosmic Wake saying to us, the privatization of energy generation is the root cause of the problem. Now, Jacob, I want to share with you, I know you're familiar with these facts, but also for our viewers, some quick kind of facts about the energy situation in the country. More than 90% of the country's power is generated by the state utility Eskom. The daily power shortfall, if you can imagine, is 4,000 to 6,000 megawatts. Eskom's debt is approaching 400 billion rand. That's $25 billion. In 2022, there were 207 days with power cuts, and now the country is nearing 100 consecutive days of blackouts. Jacob, if you had to explain this to us as an engineer, if you will, and someone, you know, firsthand, with firsthand experience, I should say, of ESCOM, what do you think is the fault in the system? Why is this happening?
Well, I think the direct cause of the problem is the performance of our generation coal fleet. The measure that is used there is normally called energy availability factor. Ordinarily, or the target is above 70. We have come from a 90% performance. Now we are below 50. So half of your coal fleet, half of the time, are not available. And that's at the center of the crisis. We can debate the causes. We can debate, who's to blame. But the direct technical problem is we've got a fleet that is not performing to expected outputs.
And, you know, when we look at the conversation today, the president speaking, announcing a state of disaster, a lot of critics, you know, suggesting that maybe he's out of touch with the reality of what's happening. Just to give our audience a sense of what just happened, people chiming in saying his decision to appoint a new minister of electricity, well, guess that is part of job creation, as we can see here on Twitter. Some people poking fun, perhaps, at that announcement. This is a meme with Drake. People saying, root out corruption and criminal elements in ESCOM, no. Accelerate implementation of independent power producers, no. But that somehow the Minister of Electricity is an announcement that's going to solve this problem. What do you make of these sort of criticisms, Husay?
What I make of it is that I was hoping that the president will consolidate rather than to have even more structures coming up, because he mentioned that the Department of Public Enterprises will continue with the restructuring, just energy transition. He mentioned that the climate committee that is within his presidency will continue with the just energy transition. And then he introduced a new minister of electricity when we have a line functional department that's supposed to deal with this. Mm. And so in my view, and then there's the National Electricity Crisis Committee that also sits within the presidency. For me, I was hoping for more consolidation in terms of what the structures that are already there, with the plan that is put in place to ensure that we accelerate trying to bring in these solutions rather than even more structures. I mean, the National Treasury is going to look at the demand side management interventions for small businesses, generators, and all sorts of things. For me, I was hoping for better consolidation.
So better consolidation is what she was hoping for. Pakamile, I want to know, how about you? I mean, just to share one more tweet that came online that we thought was noteworthy. San saying, so basically he has no solution, useless. And then another one here, Love Thy Woman, saying, who is this president really addressing when most of the country is on load shedding? Now, I know you know what load shedding is. Load shedding is a term to refer to these outages, these cuts. Take a look at this graph I want to share with you, Pakamile. This is a visualization of days with load shedding. So you can see, aside from 2016, 2017, increasing since then, and a dramatic increase in 2022, as well as this year. Pakamile, what do you make of these kind of criticisms of the president and how serious it seems the government's really taking this?
So our perspective as NUMSA has always been that this government is not really serious about tackling load shedding. You heard your expert over there, Mr. Jacob Maruha, who's a former CEO of ESCOM and a bona fide energy expert, telling you that our problems are the mismanagement of the maintenance program for the coal fleet of ESCOM. And ESCOM itself, in its own reports, have said that the fastest solution to deal with load shedding tomorrow or today is for us to maintain our coal fleet so that we can actually ensure that we provide regular electricity. He did not focus on that. What we heard this evening was more programs to ensure the greater involvement of the private sector in energy generation. Yes, he touched on maintenance, he mentioned it, but the focus, if you want to resolve load shedding quickly. That is the fastest solution. And what we've been saying as NUMSA is that this load shedding is deliberate. And we say it's deliberate because as long as there's no lights, then we can justify the privatization of Eskom. We shouldn't forget that just a mere 4 or 5 years ago in 2018, in January 2018, President Cyril Ramaphosa appeared before the World Economic Forum. He told the delegates there that we were not investing in nuclear because at that time South Africa had excess energy.
Right.
Now, how did we move from excess energy to an inability to provide electricity?
And that's exactly the government that's responsible for that. I don't mean to cut you off, but that's exactly the question that we're wondering. And you also take into effect some contextual figures for our audience. They may not know. Of course, the three of you do know that South Africa relies on coal for 80% of its energy needs. As you heard Jacob Pakamile saying, this is deliberate. Do you agree? I'm curious.
Well, I wouldn't go as far as it's deliberate, but let me say, and let me just say two things that Pagaman and Kusile have said. Consolidation and focus. The problem is at Eskom, and it's a coal fleet problem. And if you don't, if you start hitting many other things that confuses the problem, then you won't get the solution. So focus on the real problem, which is the performance of the fleet of Eskom, which is the coal fleet. Consolidate responsibility, don't divide. And it must be clear because we come from a past, in the past few months particularly, where there seems to be a disjuncture between the shareholder ministry and the policy ministry in terms of who's accountable.
Forgive me. I appreciate you saying where we should be focusing. And because you are redirecting our focus, if you will, I'd like to redirect our focus a little bit to the actual impact on human lives. Doing that, forgive me, Jacob, I'll come right back to you. But I want you to listen to what one man at a recent protest in Cape Town had to say about how much talk there is, but so little action.
We're just really tired, of going through load shedding day after day, and we want to see that action is taken. I believe there's a lot of promises, there's a lot of things that people bring within government, but we don't see realistic action being taken place. And I think today it's just a form of telling the people and in government that, listen, we want to see change.
Jacob, go ahead, finish your point, but take into consideration that concern that there's so much talk and so little action.
Yes. You see, the problem is that when you've got a problem with the coal fleet, and we know that is the most important solution, when you start adding things like, you want to fast-track private sector in circumstances that technically that is not going to move the needle on your problem, you start talking, I'm going to restructure the entire energy supply, when we know that that is a long-term project that is not going to solve the issue. So for me, consolidating and focusing on the real problem and empowering the management of Eskom to do whatever it needs to be done to turn around the coal fleet is the most important
And I'm glad we're talking solutions, but, that might make a lot of sense. But what about the people who are actually suffering, their lives being interrupted? Pakamile, could you explain to us what that actually looks like, maybe for you or for those that you are representing here today?
Well, for workers of NUMSA, what that looks like is job losses. Because in the manufacturing sector, where we have a majority of membership in factories and smelters, in mining, in the auto sector, in the motor sector, it means that there's a reduction in production. And when companies are not producing at optimum levels, it results in job losses. Yesterday, we heard painful stories from the Health and Allied Indaba Workers Trade Union, which is a trade union in South Africa representing healthcare workers. And they say that when there's load shedding, they have to choose between which patients to manually resuscitate and which patients to let die. And this is the situation we're facing. And when you have this sort of life and death situation staring you in the face, and you've got a government of Cyril Ramaphosa that can stand before the people and pontificate about solutions that are not going to solve the problem today, it tells you that these people don't take this crisis seriously.
Yeah. And, you know, you say pontificating about the solutions. Well, Mzizi Wazizwe on Twitter said on his question after watching the president pontificate, does he even live in the same country as us? Now, that may be tongue-in-cheek, but I think it does highlight the disconnect that people feel. We also see that in YouTube, people chiming into this conversation, for example, Justin Myberg saying, we export our electricity to Namibia and Lesotho, but we can't provide for our own country. Make it make sense. Well, two people who do make sense, let's listen to what some farmers had to say about the energy crisis and what you were outlining, just how it affects their livelihoods.
We are coming out of a 6, 7, 8 year drought. Then it was COVID. Now it's the lack of power and energy. And some commodities, some farmers just tell me they can't go on like that. They must make a call. They're going to leave their farms or something like that.
If load shedding keeps continuing, I think we'll, in this area, we'll lose our livelihoods. It's impossible to farm like this. You farm half the amount of seedlings in season when you're supplying supermarkets. I might as well stop, close the doors and stop the business.
Jose, it seems like the disruption is quite dire there as they're explaining it. What do you see as the short-term solution or trajectory that the government should be headed in?
There is really no other solution except for the solution that we've been mentioning here, saying that the coal-fired power plants consist of 80% of our total supply in South Africa. And without concentrating on that and having only 50% of those power plants generating electricity, you are not going to come up with a problem, because it's going to take you years. Infrastructure is long lead times. It's going to take you years to bring in new infrastructure. So all the solutions we're talking about, from regional buying power from regional utilities, that's just not sufficient. Doing procurement programs, that's good, but that's still not going to solve the problem. The primary problem that you need to solve is to fix the coal-fired power fleet and make sure that it's operating optimally. At least the board of Eskom understands that, because they've set that as one of their priorities and they've given us timelines in terms of which they wish to turn around that. I think that the other solution that at least the president confirmed today is that National Treasury will help Eskom in terms of the debt that they owe by reducing it. So that solution is coming, and we hope it comes sooner rather than later. Those are the interventions that you need to support Eskom with, so that they can procure from original equipment manufacturers that can help them address this problem.
And, you know, I'm curious, Jacob, you seem like you were nodding as we were hearing from Jose there. What do you make of the president's performance recently in terms of how he's trying to quell the concerns of the public? Not necessarily asking you to comment in the state of a commentator, but I have to say, a lot of the people that we've been hearing from, for example, I'll share with you one video comment that was sent to this show from Sibon Gisini Delilazo, kind of really highlighting just what this devastating loss means for people. Take a listen.
The persistent load shedding in South Africa has really made the lives of nurses in the workplace a hell on earth. And it's been a matter that continues to disturb the healthcare services. Healthcare workers are not able to provide comprehensive healthcare to their patients, because in the middle of the procedures, they will come, you know, the load shedding. Now, this disrupts the healthcare services in healthcare facilities, and that is a serious concern to us. But a new phenomenon now is that even the standby generators are not working well. They tend to run out of fuel, which makes the lives of nurses a serious challenge, and they feel that they are not able to give comprehensive healthcare to their patients.
Disrupting healthcare facilities, I mean, that's a serious concern. Is the president, do you think, giving the public the sense that he takes this as seriously as their lives are being affected?
Look, I think he takes it seriously. Where I put criticism is the solutions he prescribes.
Mm.
I think there are a lot of people that are giving him many ideas which I believe are removing the focus on the real issue. And in some cases, you sense that interest, business interest, especially around renewables, has become too dominant in taking over the crisis to force renewables. Now, renewables have a place in any grid for the purposes of reducing emissions, but they don't bring stability of supply that is required by fixing what is broken. And I think, this has been now a problem that in the past
mm-hmm.
3 years particularly, it has worsened. And every time mm-hmm. we go on a state of nation, it's actually a worse problem. So mm-hmm. unless people see a real turnaround
yeah.
in less days of load shedding,
well,
I think people will continue to be skeptical.
And I'm glad that you brought up renewables in that question. In our YouTube chat, Sayed Badshah saying, why aren't South Africans benefiting from solar energy? A lot of people bringing up renewable energy as well. For example, we had a video comment sent to us from Rhea Becho Makoko, a chef there in South Africa, who, well, take a listen to what she said.
So we've tried to get more gas appliances, but we are limited due to finances. We can't afford solar energy. We can't afford generators. So gas is our next best thing. So we've tried to have like a gas oven that we use when there's load shedding. We try and beat the load shedding schedule. So we try and chop and blend and boil things with the kettle before the load shedding electricity goes off. So it's just a matter of we're literally just always working in a panic mode. Those are some of the things, and not stocking as much. So we buy limited stock to avoid and limit food spoilage because the losses that we were incurring were becoming too much. So
working in a panic mode does not seem like a recipe for success for any economy or business or individual. You know, with that in mind, Pakamile, I'm wondering, it seems obvious that the whole world, South Africa included, needs to move away from fossil fuels. But what does that transition look like? I mean, how can it be a just transition in your mind?
Well, we have to firstly state that what South Africa is doing and what the South African government is implementing is not a just transition. Even though the president used that term multiple times in his sonar today, he was perverting the term because as the working class and the poor of this country, we are experiencing extreme hardship as a result of the really senseless decision to rush to move off the dependence of coal-fired power stations and a rush to implement renewable energy. We prescribe to the just transition principles as defined by the International Labour Organization, which talk about how this transition must actually address the socioeconomic problems of South Africa. So in other words, if your transition is going to result in more joblessness, more inequality, higher prices of energy, it's not a just transition. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening in South Africa. You've got the renewable energy sector, which is entirely controlled by the private sector.
Mm.
Eskom has no role to play in rolling out renewable energy.
Yeah.
And he didn't even talk about Mpumalanga, where the closure of these coal-fired power stations is going to result in 100,000 jobs lost.
Right.
So that all of that violates what a just transition is. What we're seeing in South Africa is just green capitalism running rampant,
yep.
and it's going to have a destructive effect on the poor and the working class.
And perhaps it already has. A lot of people in our YouTube chat saying, you know, you need to remove the state monopoly and ask scientists and engineers to step in and direct the projects. We also have Jacobs the Bang saying the whole load shedding thing is affecting his business in such a way his sales have dropped and he's thinking of closing shop. And last but not least, Tariq Khan saying South Africa has solar and wind power in abundance, but we can't change because of the state monopoly. So a lot of people echoing some of the concerns that you shared with us today. I want to thank you, Jacob, and all of our guests for being with us today. Pakamile, of course, and Jose. We will see you next time. And this is a conversation that we will be following here at The Stream. You can follow us at stream.aljazeera.com.